moving to the UK that I sometimes just say, like, oh, poor Alan Turing, just on the street. I'll just be walking along being like, oh my God.
What an incredible first on mic remark.
He was so helpful, oh, and you were so mean to him.
We've been talking for a while since before we started recording, but that in no way did the conversation we were having before the mics went on give any context to the statement that Grace just made.
Autism, the Second World War.
Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about classics, the ancient world, stuff, whatever we're interested in this week. Don't ask me. I'm Milo Edwards and I'm joined as ever by my intrepid co-hosts, Patrick Wyman and Phoebe Roy. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing okay.
Intrepid as hell.
Yeah.
Ready to dive headfirst into a wacky and weird new world.
That's what we like to hear. And astute old head listeners may have noticed that we are joined by guests from the old days when it was about Seinfeld, sort of. Grace Jarvis. How
Hello.
You doing?
I feel privileged to have been here during the Seinfeld era.
Before the podcast went back further in time.
Yeah, yeah.
Weirdly, it's slightly more on topic now. Like, not much.
I like it. I like that you've developed a fan group that's just like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
We like you guys. Talk about whatever.
It's us for about 70 minutes.
You know, you remember them from the Seinfeld podcast.
Yeah.
Are you interested in Seinfeld and somehow also the ancient world? Because if you are, then
welcome.
This is the show for you.
If literally you are, no then you're shows, the same kind one. Of autistic that I am.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. It's difficult to grow accustomed to a new set of voices, so you don't want to change midstream.
Exactly.
We are really sticking with the autism through line here, and I'm here for it. I'm into it.
it's not relevant.
After my son was diagnosed with autism, it definitely made me stop and rethink a great many of my behaviors and interests.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. It's so weird. I couldn't get the newspapers interested in a son of ancient history academic with podcast diagnosed with autism. No one was responding to my press release.
They were like, yeah. No, yeah.
Yep.
Checks out. Yep.
No, this is, yeah, and to the surprise of literally no one. Literally no one on the planet.
Daughter of a helicopter pilot who was also son of pilot, also not surprising to anybody.
No, yeah, fair enough.
Military pilots, a real holdout of the undiagnosed autism
community. Oh, yeah, because you're not allowed to be diagnosed. But as someone who was raised and surrounded by helicopter
pilots.
Don't
ask, don't tell,
it's
but
all
for,
of
like,
them.
Train stuff.
That's the thing. They all, like, yep. Autism makes them good at being helicopter pilots. But they're not allowed to have it on the record for some reason.
That's odd.
I know. It's eugenics really is what it is, but.
Well, if they were doing eugenics properly, you'd have to have autism to be a helicopter pilot.
Truly.
Yeah.
That's look, like, this is an adaptive evolutionary thing that is making
designed
us better
to make
at being
you better at flying helicopters. Yeah.
Flying at helicopters, operating trains,
organizing files.
Yeah.
Yes. All of these things. Like, God damn, that would be. New research project. gotta think about the adaptive benefits of being on the spectrum in a 21st century world. Seems like there's a lot of
Well, I have recently been going to niche museums. And
ooh, okay. Because, I like a niche museum.
Yeah, yes, I love so it. I went to the Charles Dickens Museum. I went to the Old Operating Theater Museum, which is, as my boyfriend pointed out, a trap because it is in a turret up a spiral staircase that you have to hold onto a rope to get up above a drum and bass club, which is like, this is a museum that only attracts neurodivergent people, but you've made it so loud. It's so loud.
Well, originally they put the drum and bass club in to cover the screams from the operating theater.
Well, yeah.
But then eventually the operating theater became defunct.
Just constant taps on the walls of your enclosure.
It's truly awful.
Drum and bass club.
But it is, I've been going to niche museums and I've been meeting older women who are volunteering at niche museums and being like, aha, here is where women with autism end up.
Yeah,
that lady
right.
just locked in with me, telling me the history of Charles Dickens for like an hour. The woman at the old operating theater being like, do you want to meet the leeches? And I was like, yes, absolutely.
100%.
I like that they have live leeches there, like unnecessarily.
And she had like a thing where she was like, roll up, meet the leeches. And then she had just like a Tupperware, like a pasta sauce jar.
The fact that it's Tupperware makes it so much better.
Amazing.
Like that, I don't know why, but that's the perfect leech holding enclosure.
They were thriving in there.
Well, they got an old lady volunteer to decide how to hold the leeches.
And she was like, this is the most efficient way.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at all the like old timey surgical equipment, and you like the whole kind of point of the museum is like, oh God, look how barbaric medicine used to be. And then you go to the like gynecology and obstetrics section, and I'm like, this is all the same.
Yeah.
This is all straight up the same.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a pair of forceps?
I have at the old operating theater museum.
Sure.
It was rusty, but it was the same. And Grace, then usually.
I hate going to the gynecologist above the drum and bass club. It's the worst.
Grace, I met one of these ladies years and years ago when I was at university, and we were on our first dig, and one of the people who were in charge of us was a paleoentomologist.
Beautiful.
And she put me in charge of getting some like soil samples.
Perfect.
And so basically what this involves is like you get like a kind of you get your trowel and you kind of make a square, and you kind of make a square kind of out of this sort of cross section of strata of earth, and it is like it's really really easy to get wrong. And you've got to be really, really careful because otherwise your sample can like fall apart. And then you've got to label it really carefully because soil really looks like other soil. It doesn't really like differentiate itself. Mm. And she came over to check what I was doing. And I had these like kind of, these sort of like Ziploc bags with these kind of squares of soil, just like kind of slowly kind of turning into a pile next to me. And she said, so how's it going? And I said, oh, no, it's not very interesting, is it? And she looked absolutely fucking baffled. She gestured at the pile of the soil squares and was like, this is not interesting. And
what do you mean?
Oh, that's interesting.
It was good at the Operating Theatre Museum because I went over to the older lady, and the benefit of older women with autism is that they're on the level, because usually when I try and talk to older women about what I perceive to be the absolute horrors of childbirth, they're like, no, it's not too bad, you're being dramatic, whatever. And I was like, it's funny because I was just looking at those instruments and everything else is kind of like barbaric and old-timey and the gynecology section, and she at the same time as I said it went, it's exactly the same. I was like, it's exactly the same. She was like,
they nailed
man.
It in about 1780. There was no need.
Did they nail it, or is that just a wonderful reflection of the continuing continuing presence of patriarchy in all of our
truly
it is
the,
a lot
well,
of as the only person
the more
on
you look at
has,
museums
the only person say. On mic who has done it. I think I have an answer for you, but you're not gonna like it.
Oh no.
Is it misogyny exists in everything and the world hates women?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
that's the one.
Didn't do it, but was present and immediately reinforced my understanding of patriarchy as a
thing.
Been there a couple times.
Your job as a man in the delivery room, as a good man, from what I can tell, is to stand guard over the person in a vulnerable position against the patriarchy poking at them.
and
you're
to
kind
be
of
like
the Terminator when you're a man married to a
to
woman.
Be like, hey,
you're
actually,
like one of them sent to protect them. That's the
like, no, she says the epidural didn't work. The epidural didn't work. You need to redo
Bitch.
It. Like, she's not being hysterical. No. The epidural didn't work.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, that's
that
the,
exact
yeah,
vibe.
That kind
I'm
of
going
stuff.
To need you to inject her again.
My dad has a, because I've got medical PTSD from this exact sort of shit as a kid. My dad has a very like stand in front of me with his arms crossed being like, what are you going to do? Hey,
hell yeah.
Tell us, what are you going to do?
Can I see that machine?
Yeah. What's the plan here? Before you do anything, Tell us.
That is positive masculinity.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's standing somewhere with your arms crossed, making a misogynist think twice about whatever he's going to do is like, that's
being the only person in the room being like, actually, I care about the safety of this woman.
Yeah.
I do think she's a person.
Big recommend from us.
Yeah.
Speaking of positive masculinity, ancient Greece, sort of. Those guys knew how to treat a lady, let me tell you.
Sure did.
Yeah,
sure did.
We have watched Chaos on Netflix. That's Chaos with a K. If only the Greeks had a spelling of Chaos that they could have drawn on. In order to, why is this like a rule with TV that whenever they try and spell something more Greek, they always spell it less Greek?
Isn't Chaos, is it already a Greek word?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not spelled with a K.
No, it's not spelled with a K.
No, it's
not. That's wild.
No. I am guessing that there was probably an executive at Netflix who was like, you can't just spell it regular.
Yeah.
No.
Who's going to watch a show about ancient Greek mythology set in the modern period if it's spelled with a CH?
Well, we don't want to make it seem like there will be any actual Greek people in it, you know?
Yeah.
No.
And exactly. To be fair, I would have stopped watching if there was.
Okay. There's already a show.
Anti-Greek racism, baby.
There's already. I've accidentally answered the question. Way. There is a show called Chaos with a CH, an American comedy drama on CBS that aired in 2011. About a group of rogue CIA spies.
Never
heard of it before.
No,
but I just found that out because I was trying to pull up the Wikipedia for the show that we watched.
And this is what happens when you misspell chaos. This is you're proving their point for him, Milo.
Exactly. I typed chaos on autopilot, not with a K. And where did it get me? It got me to the wrong Wikipedia page.
Got this. Look, so the executive had a point.
CIA.
Is what you're saying. Yeah. That this is what I'm hearing from this is that dipshit executive really, really nailed it.
Yeah, actually, he did nail it. Much like the designers of gynecological equipment in the 19th century.
He got it in one. First try.
Exactly. We're like, no need to improve on this.
No one with an opinion we approve of would object to it, so.
Yes. Yikes. Too real. Still too real.
So the premise of this show, insofar as I understand it after watching an hour of it, is that it's sort of set in the modern world, kind of in Los Angeles, but they're calling it Crete, also with a K. That's more accurate. And the Greek gods are real, but they're all like wearing tracksuits and stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's kind of like
the Greek gods are all like Florida aunties.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they live.
It's like if Wes Anderson did it. But he was way worse at his job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as symmetric.
Yeah.
A lot of pastels.
Because I'm unclear on whether the gods just like live in the city as well, or whether they're supposed to be like living on a mountain top. I don't quite get it.
Well, they're living on Mount Olympus, but Mount Olympus is like sort of like a
nearby
compound.
It's like the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's like the now on fire Pacific Palisades.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Like
kind of a ham-fisted metaphor, really.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah, a little bit.
They live behind the big Zeus sign.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I really respect how fully this show commits to the bit.
Mm-hmm. It does,
They absolutely had a vision of how they were going to do it, and they 100% went for it. And maybe I'm crazy, and maybe I'm in the minority here, but I think it works. I didn't hate it.
Like, okay, here is my overall feeling about Chaos so far. In case, listeners, you had not worked this out, this is the new show that we're going to be doing. It's, I'm sure you'll agree, a little bit of a change in pace and tone from Those About to Die. Thank God.
I don't think they had a head injury before making it.
So one of the things that always gets me a little bit, just not like annoyed, just like a bit like whenever there's a show about gods from the ancient world, or gods that sort of that are no longer worshipped, I would like some talk about the mechanism by which they're still there. That's what I would like. I would like it because, like in American Gods, which I also didn't like particularly, because anything which is like, oh, it's like the ancient gods, but like now, always makes me think a little bit of like a precocious child's like GCSE classics project.
Yeah, we're making Greek mythology. Cool.
Yeah, but it's like now.
It's very Baz Luhrmann, Romeo and Juliet.
So you'll be happy to hear that my first note said, "Oh, interesting energy of Romeo plus Juliet." And then when you first in the first scene where you see Dionysus, my note just says, "Oh, lol, it's just copied."
Yeah,
fine. Like aesthetically, it's simply copied. But what I would like.
I dig that.
No, that's fine. And also, I kind of feel like they've sort of got to a point where they're just like, young people don't know what that is. It's old enough that we can now start copying it, and it's a homage, and it's not plagiarism.
They copied something good, so half a mark.
Yeah, like plagiarism plus 30 years is homage. That's the rule.
Mm. Yeah. Plagiarism plus time is homage.
I will say, anything that starts with Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, I'm hyped. I'm sad.
Grace is happy. But like
that's the song, the music, I was like, they have good music. Like
they did somehow have good music.
I think the problem is because that song started playing and I was like, oh hell yes. But then they started playing Hold On, I'm Coming, and then Don't Fear the Reaper. And I was like, you've kind of put all the songs that make me sit up and go, oh fuck yeah, in a movie. But usually there's only one.
Yeah.
Usually you wait and you hold on and you use Money for Nothing and you're like, oh, fuck yeah. But they put like four of those exact songs.
So you think they should have kept that powder dry a little bit? Like,
my entertainment lawyer girlfriend kept going, really expensive music really clearances expensive in this
music.
Show.
Yeah.
They spend so much of the budget on music. And then they had one really shit song that I'd never heard of about halfway through, and I was like, they ran out of money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where they ran out of cash.
Like, music department, you have to stop.
we can't keep writing these
checks to Mark Knopfler.
I would like once for there to be some like consideration of what the mechanism is, because like sometimes you have the gods were always real, but people stopped observing their cult, so now they're just like chilling, or they take a kind of the gods are real and they're kept real by the continued observance in the cult. I would just like there to be a kind of a what has happened to involve this continuity of cult between classical Greece and contemporary California, because no one's done it, and I think it would be interesting.
I think they've done kind of a lazy, like, it's just stayed the same.
Anyway. But how are they explaining all of the stuff that has happened in the, just in case we're wanting to like wonder about like, you know, what my, what my special interest is. I think we're getting a pretty good plot structure line. I like explanations, Chris. Yeah. That's what I like. I like proper explanations.
Expedition.
Mm. I want to know whether or not like the
exposition,
like the Ottoman Wars is still like a thing in this universe.
I mean, yeah. It's true.
Yeah, did the Siege of Candia last for 21 years in the world of chaos?
And how this has is it a, made it to California? Question. You know what I want? Yeah. I want to see a fucking trade map. A military and trade contact map, some kind of Silk Road situation where I can track how the gods ended up in California. And the reason for this is because nobody who's ever done this kind of storyline has ever tackled this question. And what they've done instead is something which, like, again, like I enjoyed the show. I was vibing, but it does have a lot of okay. So.
Just
you caught me.
Your disbelief, yeah.
I'm a god.
Yeah.
So, and you could have cut that out and explained like what happened at Constantinople.
Not to give a recommendation in the middle of the podcast, but I think you would love a New Zealand television program that no one ever watched except me, called The Almighty Johnsons, which is about how the Norse gods had to flee Scandinavia because everyone stopped believing in them, and they ended up in New Zealand in this particular family. And when they turn 21, they get assigned a god and they become their embodiment on Earth. And then they get involved with the Māori gods, and it's like, well, yeah, you're in their fucking land. It's really good.
That sounds good.
That actually does sound awesome.
Annoyingly, it's really hard to find.
With Māori culture, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, anytime I see a like portrayal of a Norse god where they don't have a New Zealand accent, I'm like, oh.
Questions.
It works so well when they were all in Auckland.
Yeah. Phoebe, you got the basic problem here, Phoebe, you got to be more stoned when you watch this.
Okay, yeah.
This is... I've gotten much better at suspending disbelief since I began spending most of my evenings high out of my mind. Like this, it's a lot easier for me to just, you know, slip into it like a velour tracksuit.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I can get back on that when I stop breastfeeding.
Yeah.
That's not something I have to worry about.
It's like one of those guys who's like, there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothing, except you're like, there's no bad TV show, there's only watching it wrong.
Yes.
Because for like those about to die, it was like, you just need to be scrolling your phone while you're watching it. And for this is, you just need to be really high. You need to be coming at it from the right perspective. And then you'll see.
As far as Pat's concerned, there's no such thing as bad TV. There's only an edible that ain't shit.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah. I'm not going to say you're wrong in your characterization. I did think Those About to Die was fucking terrible, but there is a correct way to watch it.
Yeah.
Just like this is a tangent, but there is a sandwich shop I love in Los Angeles called Fat Sal's.
Mm-hmm.
And on these sandwiches, they put mozzarella sticks. Like there's one with buffalo chicken fingers, blue cheese dressing. They put French fries on the sandwiches.
Oh, hell yeah.
There is a correct context in which to eat Fat Sal's.
Right? Hi.
That's how I, mostly. Also drunk.
Yeah, okay.
Could work then, but then you're running some risk of regurgitation, and I'm not sure you want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that.
There's a correct time and place and way to eat a Fat Sal's sandwich that does not necessarily reflect on the quality of the sandwich. It's all about your surroundings.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a mindset thing. Are you ready to grind?
You need to lock in on this sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I do a lot
yeah,
of locking in
grind
on sandwiches.
Set, grind
be
beef in my sandwich.
They do have some lovely ground beef options. Mm. I think like there are almost any show can be enjoyable if you're watching it if you're employing it correctly. I think this one it did really help me being high as balls to get into the world and just be like, yeah, okay, I guess there's gods in Crete and Crete looks like Venice
LA
Beach. That's great.
And then Dionysus shows up, and then in the background we've got the boys.
Yeah, I did not give it honest to God, Phoebe. This is the difference between you and me. I did not give it another thought after after the opening scene with I'm like, oh, Zeus, okay. I'm like, cool. Oh, this is the world. We're here now. Okay, great. Like, literally did not think about it again for the rest of the show.
It didn't necessarily affect my enjoyment. I'm just saying that the next time someone does a show like this, I would really, really like some really, really complicated backstory.
Yeah.
You want to see the show Bible.
Yeah.
Mm. You want to get into the show Bible.
I want to see the show Bible.
Probably someone wrote it down and then for the edit, they were like, we know this, but they don't need to know this.
Then they started chilling with Dr. Wyman and they were just like, we don't need a show Bible.
But that's good writing. Like at a fundamental level, that's good writing. For where you don't have to tell your audience everything. You just kind of let them draw their own conclusions about stuff. Like from the perspective of you as the folks making the show, you need to understand these mechanisms, but like not telling the audience stuff. I think we should keep audiences more in the dark.
I do prefer that most of the time. I feel like I watch stuff now where I'm like, oh, cool. We're doing tell, don't show. Okay.
Yeah.
And show.
Like, metaphor is dead.
The problem is fucking George R.R. Martin.
Yeah.
That's at a basic level, that's the problem. We've now grown used to understanding like the tax structure of a fantasy world. And that's, we don't always need to know that. You don't always need to know how.
People used to complain about too much detail in Lord of the Rings. That used to be the joke of like, well, we don't need to know about all the trees. It's like, well, make up your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, I need to know about all the trees.
Well, me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
The episode like the trees.
Yeah, the episode of Westeros Question Time that they shot was really a bridge too far.
I say this as a person who has several of the Game of Thrones reference books on their shelf. Like, so this is clearly this is not practicing what I preach.
Well, you and George R. R. Martin, because he famously can't remember any of it.
He should. Yeah.
It's true.
He's got to call you. My minor gripe with this show, which is a gripe I have with a lot of things and is unforgivable when you bring it up to most people, is that they're basically using the framing of Greece. Everything is Greek, and they keep fucking saying Latin shit.
Yeah,
and I'm like, stop saying Latin stuff.
Milo, that annoyed me as well.
Yeah,
good. Yeah. I'm glad that you said it so that I didn't have to say.
Unless you're gonna do a Roman god crossover, then what are we doing?
Okay, but
same shit anyway.
Okay, but we also have as its central tenet, we have the story of Eurydice and Orpheus. Which, yes, Greek names, it's not a Greek myth.
Ooh.
The first recorded incidents of the Orpheus and Eurydice story that we know is not until, it's either Ovid or Virgil, I can't remember which, but it's definitely not in any of the kind of the consistent
Yeah, it the, did feel odd Greek to make sources. It like as though it was essential to like one of the kind of classic tales when I was like, I've always felt like it was kind of an offshoot.
It not only is it an offshoot, but there are like lots and lots of stories of Orpheus, and there are stories of Orpheus and Eurydice. But the specific story that everyone knows, which has the same parent story as Lot's wife, and there are very similar stories in basically every kind of myth system that like kind of comes from kind of Indo-European, that there's a Sanskrit one. I think there's like oddly like a Latvian one. There are Irish ones as well. And it's not a Greek myth. Well, it's not a Greek myth.
Latvian Orpheus and Eurydice is a cursed thought.
Well, it's indicative of the fact that it's such a good metaphor that every single culture has done the like, you can't love someone enough to save them from death thing. But I maybe am too opposed to conflict or too romantic. But I hate an interpretation where Orpheus and Eurydice aren't desperately in love with each other.
I was like, what do you mean? She can't be leaving him with each other.
That's the whole thing.
And also, like, what is he supposed to be like Jason Mraz? What's happening here?
Weird.
But, okay, stop pretending you know who Jason Mraz is, Phoebe. that's enough. You don't acknowledge the existence of Jason Mraz. That's canon on this podcast.
No. I acknowledge the existence of Jason Mraz, the man, his music, not real.
Who knows? Just don't think that he's the fourth Caliph.
So, funnily enough, I also do not believe that Jason Mraz's music exists.
Thank you, Pat.
I know what the man looks like, and I have firmly made it. You know how hard it is to avoid listening to Jason Mraz if you were in college in the early
2000s? Yeah.
I did it.
I don't know that I know what he looks like. Does he wear like a wee little hat?
Yeah, he wears like a pork pie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pat, you've probably never heard this story actually, which is that.
No, I have not.
Which is that I know lots of stuff about Jason Mraz, including his hat. I once wrote for somebody that I was trying to get hold of. I once wrote them because he had a hat that was similar to Jason Mraz's, and I wrote him a cease and desist letter from the militant wing of the Jason Mraz ultras ordering him to stop wearing the hat. And I thought that this was going to make him be like, I'm in love with you, let's go out.
Every day I learn new things about you, Phoebe, that make it actually a greater achievement that you've made it this far.
All I can say is that that's hot, first of all.
No one I've threatened to sue has ever not wanted to sleep with me, so
we
I don't
only
know
have
why
to get lucky once. Your hat has to get lucky every time.
Like, again, you're so close to the general tone that I was like striking. This wasn't even that long ago. This was not when I was a teenager. This was like in the last decade. Oh, this is a free one, isn't it? Fuck. Yeah, fine. But I realized that I like don't know any Jason Mraz songs, and I said
you don't need to.
And I said this to George, who went, "Oh yeah, you do. You know the famous one." And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Yeah, you fucking do. You're doing a thing where you pretend not to have heard something really, really famous." And I'm like, "No, I know I do that thing, but like now I'm being hoisted by my own petard, but genuinely I've never heard this song." And he plays it to me, and then Marlo and I had exactly the same conversation. And I was like, "I've never heard this song before in my entire life." Marlo was like, "You must have done. Like, literally, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing this song. Like, this song was like in the water. This song was in the rain." And not only that, but now having heard it, I can't remember it.
I can't remember it either. I do think it was on. We had like in school like a student drive where anyone could like put files on there, and immediately became just pirated music. And I think that was one of the songs that was like available classically on there.
It goes to show that Australia is quite civilized, because in the UK that would have been far more horrifying stuff on that drive.
Well, I went to a religious all-girl school, so you know, people had rules.
Strong. I think religious all-girl school in the UK, the stuff on the drive would be even worse.
I mean, we also had like a cyber safety talk every year that was like, I mean, it's incredibly easy to find out who's done this. So everyone was kind of terrified at all times.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It was Safe Rebellion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jason Mraz. The religious school having a meeting about whether Jason Mraz was godly enough to be allowed on the server.
There's, honestly, if you were looking to quietly push the bounds of acceptable stuff for young people in the early to mid 2000s, Jason Mraz, about as good as you were going to get. Mm.
He says, "I'm yours," could be talking to Jesus.
Truly.
We don't know.
Is that a Jason Mraz line?
I once got in trouble for singing a song from a musical where a girl is upset that her boyfriend has broken up with her. So she's like, listing all the ways she wants to kill him. And I had to go and get a meeting because I was encouraging younger girls to kill their boyfriends or whatever. I was like, this is a Jason Robert Brown song. I don't know. It's not like the Sex Pistols. I feel like this is safe.
Even to be quite frank, a lot of that, you listen to the Sex Pistols now and you're like, really?
I mean,
that was all right.
My favorite thing to think about. The Sex Pistols were technically a boy band.
Yeah.
An anti-monarchy boy band.
yeah.
Well, like right. Blue started out as being, but then they got quashed.
Yeah. Because Lee Ryan got too obsessed with Wales.
Yeah, by the palace's PR machine. Okay. Duncan from Blue used to be a very, very astute anti-monarchy commentator, I'll have you know.
Yeah, he was silent.
absolute silence by Pat and Grace, who don't know who Blue are, and Milo, who's
I don't know who these people are.
Don't know.
Imagine if the Backstreet Boys had a really sad career trajectory.
They did, didn't
Sadder
they?
Sadder than the one they did?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not having this.
Was one of them killed tragically, like the girl from the Pogues?
So you've got Lee Ryan, who the last thing I heard about him was he ended up in court for racially abusing an air stewardess.
Oof.
And then you've got, I don't know what happened to Duncan.
He was on Hollyoaks for a bit.
Oh, there you go. Simon Webb has sciatica. And he's constantly updating his fans on the progress of his sciatica.
He has got sciatica.
And then Anthony Costa, I think, plays a lot of Call of Duty, but I'm not really sure. Not really sure what Anthony Costa gets up to.
I mean,
well,
Liam Payne fell out of a hotel, so, you know, it could be worse.
He's got the coffee millions to fall back on.
Yeah, that's true. The worst thing about Anthony Costa for me is that I'm constantly seeing people who are no better than Anthony Costa get. I remember like Gok Wan got to do the Queen's fucking Diamond Jubilee, and I'm like, that's a gig that Costa should be getting. I would be fucking fuming at my agent if I'm Anthony Costa and I see Gok Wan is at the fucking Diamond Jubilee. I would be turning up in person firing my agent over that shit.
I love that. Yeah. I love to think about non-UK
listeners for that sentence.
I love to think of you having a spreadsheet of like UK celebrities that you think deserve certain gigs and being furious when they don't get them.
Absolutely.
It's one of the most British things I've ever experienced from you, to be quite frank. That's
what do you mean Rula Lenska's doing Bake Off? I could do Bake Off. I'm more current than Rula Lenska.
Yeah, every, every once in a while I'm recording with you guys, one of you says something that I know is in the English language, but I can't parse any of the words or the broader context. And I'm like,
I often just go
roll with it.
I know what noise to make. That's masking for you. I understand the tone enough to have the correct reaction, but I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, that's... So I'm coming to London later this year.
Congrats.
And to prepare myself, I've just been watching the video of the Irish guy driving through screaming, "We're in the home of the enemy, Kathleen!" over and over. And starts playing Up Ye Black and Tans out the car window. That's the energy that I'm going to be bringing to
London. I actually was stoned the other night, and my TikTok decided that I would really like to see a bunch of people telling me what their favorite Irish memes were. It was like some version
These compilations are extraordinary.
Yeah, and I was like, I mean, these are, I was just cackling. I was cackling away in my house. Just
as is your right.
Just Irish, I guess, journalists going, "Oh, my favorite Irish meme is," and then they play the meme and I'm like, "Oh my God, that is hilarious."
Another classic.
Another classic.
They've done it again.
Whose horse is that?
They've simply done it again.
Yeah.
For a country with, you know, 3-4 million people, the Irish really do punch above their weight in meme production.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Speaking of a context in which you might ask, whose horse is that? The ancient Greek gods. and why is it fucking my wine?
Yeah, it's big whose hog is that energy also.
Exactly, yes.
I liked that Cassandra was Billy Piper. I like that.
Oh yeah, cool.
Cassandra was involved. I have a real
kind of begrimed Billy Piper. What's she been lamenting?
Yeah, as an autistic woman, I have a real connection to Cassandra, the woman who can predict the future, but no one believes. As someone who's been saying for the last 5 years, you know how we're exactly replicating the events that led up to the Second World War, and everyone's being like, you know, you're being dramatic, right? And now everyone's like, fascism, and I'm like, I know. I've been trying to tell you people.
I have an inherited special interest.
Yeah.
I've been drawing you diagrams of helicopters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pandemic, recession, holocaust.
Yeah, it's fun to not be believed.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Try being a woman.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Try having an epidural that doesn't work because
that was an illuminating experience for me.
Three men to vouch for the fact that it's not working to get it to be fixed, from what I can tell.
That is mostly correct. Yes.
I'm not gonna say what I was gonna say to that because I think it's probably just quite a traumatic thing to say, and I'm not gonna say it. It's fine.
Well, now you kind of got to say.
No, let's move on.
Birth is
no,
bad
no,
news.
I think Pat, it's better if she doesn't.
All right. No, you know what? You're probably right.
Bad news.
Not to silence women, but I think on this occasion.
Oh, Jesus.
We can't afford to.
So the canonical story of Orpheus and Eurydice, I'm not, in this context, I get why that can be bothersome, but I'm not that bothered by it because the show is basically running with the idea of mythology as fanfic.
I'm not saying that like bothers me specifically. It's just that while we're at they're using both Greek and Latin words, and that's really fucking annoying, is that they're also using is actually something that's pretty interesting. They're using an ancient world Netflixification of ancient myth because to a Roman poet they would be selling it as, oh, this is a Greek myth, but it's something that they just like came up with by themselves. So it's fan fiction of itself.
It's like how Americans think that Australians drink Fosters, and I've never seen one in my whole life.
You've never seen a Fosters or an American?
Both.
I
refuse to believe they exist.
Yeah, you're not missing it.
I once went on a deep dive about this.
Yeah.
Australians used to drink Fosters,
oh,
but
really?
Like a really long time ago.
Oh, like, I thought it was like a marketing campaign.
But it's like living memory, but like just like in the 70s and before.
Sure, sure.
And then it fell out of favor, and then they were like, why don't we market it to the British? They'll drink anything.
I mean, and seems then it to kinda, have worked.
And then it got bought by Asahi, and then it got reintroduced to Australia. But by which time everyone had forgotten that they ever used to drink it.
We make
beer here. Like a cane toad?
Yeah, basically.
Tried so to fix, like, the problem they made.
Yeah. Well, there were other beers that were running rampant in Australia. Yeah, and I thought that maybe
local beers. They were like, oh, they're making their own. We gotta squash this.
Yeah. They've all got mixed matosis.
They're thriving without us.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got to make Foster's taste really bad to stop it reproducing. But yeah, that was one of my Wikipedia interests that I went down for a while.
I mean, the concept of using, like, characters that we are culturally broadly familiar with and kind of using them like kids use Barbie dolls to, like, make a different point or make the same point but at a different audience is, like, worthwhile, I think.
Make them kiss, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, you know.
Yeah, can we got to do some shipping.
Yeah. Got to do some shipping. Dionysus was pretty gay, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And in fairness, so too were many of his fans.
I mean, well, exactly.
There's one of my favorite. So I just did a bunch of episodes on Alexander the Great for Tides of History. Mm-hmm. And my favorite Alexander the Great story is how when he got really shit-faced and he murdered his friend Black Cletus, he stabbed him with a spear at a drinking party.
Black Cletus.
Cletus the Black, guy who had saved his life in a battle.
Was it like a primary school situation where it was like Jack B and Jack N, where it was like, we have two Cletuses, one of them's Black Cletus?
A lot of Cletuses.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of Cletuses running around in among the Macedonian aristocracy of the mid-4th
Brunette
century
Cletus.
BC. Yeah, there's a Black,
Scar
there was also White
Cletus.
Yeah, Scar Cletus, a lot of Ptolemies
Camp
also.
Cletus.
Hello.
After Alexander does this, after he stabs Black Cletus with a spear, he falls into some sort of a deep depression because he's killed one of his oldest friends in a fit of
you would be upset,
psychopathy. Yeah.
Why have you got the spear on you at the drinking party as well? Like,
he's
such an impractical carry.
He grabbed it from one of the guards after they had already been broken up once.
Wow.
So he really wanted to stab his friends. This is it's a real Alexander the Great story here. But so he's obviously down in the dumps after this. He's despondent, drinking still more. And the way that all of his companions, like the future famous guys like Ptolemy and Seleucus and like all of these famous Macedonian future conquerors, the way they get Alexander out of his funk is by telling him that he was mind poisoned by Dionysus. And so they were like, look, it wasn't you. Dionysus was here. He got you. He made you stab Black Cletus. And Alexander was satisfied with that and then went on with his genocidal conquering.
I guess that is kind of what religion is for, to remains. I mean,
all right,
Christians still do that with, like, the demons, you know. It was, that wasn't me. That was the demons. It's like, well, it looks like it was you. You were holding
one of
the sword.
It's one of the things I like about this show, though, is I actually think they pretty much nail how the ancient Greeks thought about the gods and how a lot of ancient peoples thought about the gods, in the sense that they're not like some foreign thing or separated from you on a different plane all the time. The gods are among you. They're always doing stuff. They don't particularly care about you.
Yeah, and they're not good people.
And
they're civil service.
Yeah, and you're and they're just going to do stuff and you're going to have to live with the consequences of that, but please try not to anger them.
Yeah.
And
don't make it worse.
I totally agree. I think that's a good aspect of it.
That's why I'm a Terry Pratchett girl rather than a Martin or Tolkien gal, because
when are we going to get Pratt Summer?
Well, exactly. He's just like, the gods are mean to you. And they kind of like it when your life sucks, and sometimes they do it on purpose. Anyway,
I generally like the idea of the gods being characterized as forces of nature, who are cruel and capricious, and sometimes are kind. But that's because they are fundamentally neutral, just like a force of nature is. They're like a flood or an earthquake. They don't have any particular, like, emotional connection. Or sometimes they're like a rainbow or something similar.
I was talking to a scholar of ancient Greek religion about this on Tides a few months back, and he was like, the thing you have to understand about ancient Greek religion is that the gods just were. It wasn't a matter of, like, believing in the gods or having to sacrifice to them. It's just that they were there. And if you didn't sacrifice to them, that might make them angry. They might not care, yeah. But they might.
But they, and if they, might, did, and if they, yeah, exactly. Mm.
I also think it, sometimes it feels productive to be like, I'm having this specific problem. I could sit on my hands and freak out, or I could go put a lamb near Athena to be like, she's in charge of this and she might help, you know? Yeah. As opposed to just sort of like throwing up your hands and being like, somebody help me. It's like there's kind of a designated department.
Yeah. Like personally, as somebody who likes things to be organized, I like the idea of there being a bureaucracy mediating.
Me
mediating
too.
Between you and fate. Like there's an ombudsman. There is somebody that you can appeal to.
Yes.
That's more of an ancient Chinese way of viewing it, honestly. The idea that there's like a strict hierarchy of spirits, each of which has a specific responsibility for a specific thing. Mm. That's the whole. So go off a little bit of a tangent here. But so the oldest written texts we have in Chinese are the oracle bones from the Shang Dynasty. They go back to about 1200 BC. Oldest Chinese characters. The only thing that these texts are about is divination. So they're trying to figure out which specific spirit, ancestor, or god is responsible for the problem they're having and whether their proposed solution to it works. So
sounds a lot like how gynecology and obstetrics works as well.
It's exactly the same
just
principle.
Sort of waving
exactly
your hand the over same. The situation being like,
yeah, could be blood. Could be this, could be that. Yeah. And
leeches,
what we'll deal with this? Do we need to cut the heads off of 50 prisoners of war?
Oh yeah, classic.
And that was how the Shang approached things. The for the Greeks,
I like the Sibylline oracles.
Yeah. Exactly the same principle involved. And but for the Greeks and the Romans, it's more frankly chaotic than that because there is no easy
with
way
a
of
K.
telling
with a K
with yeah. chaotic
and
with
that
a K.
is because the entire show was partnered with Skims, so they had to change the CH out for a K because it's in the contract.
Yeah.
And you can see that if you look at Orpheus's tight ass, you will notice that those are Skims.
Yeah. That's right.
They also tried
bras in the world.
They kind of tried to make Orpheus both what he is, which is like a lover boy, and also like a fuck boy, where it's like he's kind of like this like rock star musician guy, which kind of doesn't gel with his whole thing of this is my muse and I'm obsessed with her. Like it was weird to be like, I've written this about you for other people when that's not. It's usually I've written this about you because I love you so much. It has to be manifested in music.
Yeah, him and Eurydice are living like a very mundane life, given that he is supposed to be like a megastar.
Sort
of, you know, like she's driving a little Volkswagen Golf to the supermarket, and like it's.
That's why the stars live in Villa Thrace, is because you can have that kind of lifestyle. it's like Pacific Palisades or Brentwood. In Los Angeles, you know, you can just be famous and drive a Volkswagen Golf around if you want to, because everybody knows that if the poors come in, there's police for that.
Sure, yeah.
And so, yeah, we've got them. They're having their little plot line. You've got Zeus as Jeff Goldblum, he's having a sort of midlife crisis. He's very concerned about aging. He's very concerned about a prophecy that he thinks means that his time as Zeus might be coming to an end.
He's having a great time, though, as Jeff. Jeff is having marvelous.
Apparently, crazy thing that Annabelle told me, it was going to be Hugh Grant and they had to replace him at the last minute.
Oh.
Imagine how different of a vibe that would have been.
It would have been. I think it would have worked quite well, though.
I'm always happy to see Hugh Grant.
I find that, I like I said, I'm not very keen on the extremely late 90s stylings of the, okay, yeah, you got me. I'm one of the Titans. Of
I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Don't even ask.
Yeah.
We already had the film Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
I guess you're wondering how I got myself into this situation, pan out eagle pecking out.
Which is kind of what Prometheus was doing.
I know. Yeah. And I did have a note which is basically wondering whether or not the eagle comes down every day and is like, oh, what is it? Can I have something different?
Yeah, is it the same eagle?
I don't want this. This is disgusting.
Mm.
I don't want to eat a human liver. Could I get some chips?
They should swap them out. They've got shift work.
Yeah, they've got to have like a rotation of like four eagles so that they don't get too
vitamin
fed
A
up
poisoning
with liver.
Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. What if the eagle gets vitamin A poisoning? They're just, they yeah. they have no wrinkles, but they but they're fucking sick of liver. Can I tell a really really brief anecdote? Just like while it's in my head, I need to get it out. I need to get it out.
Exercise it.
Yeah. Also, probably a significant trigger warning for a horrific medical thing that
liver
like if that like bothers you, then like don't like just fast forward like 3 minutes. Okay. So when I had my baby earlier this year, I almost bled to death. I didn't. Hooray! Yay me!
Congrats.
Congrats to me for
not
really
you're not coming
to
at
death.
Us from the nether realm. George no, didn't have not, to Orpheus
not,
you.
This is
that's
not
how strong this
get,
podcast
I did
is.
Not
she's
get
gone to Hades and she's still zooming in.
I did not get Eurydice. Yeah. No, you know what? They have really good Wi-Fi down there now. Like no one, like everyone thought, like it used to be just like, oh, what, 3G? Fuck.
Patreon actually integrates with the River Styx. That's what...
But something that I did, and you know, it's fine. I survived. So did my baby. Everything's fine. I'm in therapy for it because you know I have PTSD. But that's fine.
Welcome.
On account of almost dying in a routine medical event, which like should not happen in a rich developed country. But something that I discovered the other day, and I just need to get this out, is that what might have been my last word. Which I did not know this at the time, and I did not know this until the other week when someone informed me of it, what were nearly my last words were the same as the last words of Spider-Man in the first part of Avengers Assemble.
What were they?
They were nearly, I don't feel so good, which is apparently what Spider-Man says in Avengers Assemble.
They're pretty classic last words.
Which I didn't know. Which I didn't know. And if someone had just leant over and said, you know that that is a Spider-Man quote, I'd have said, oh, wheel me back. Wheel me back. I'm going to say something different. I need to say something different.
Could I change that to, this is just like the old-timey surgery museum?
Yeah. I need to do the Spike Milligan instead. I've told you I was ill.
Can I change it to the princes in the tower survived? Can I change it to that?
Yeah.
Is that, do you believe that canonical?
Not even slightly, but it's a fun one to
chat. The princes survived and they invented the speculum. Now.
I was going to say those motherfuckers were definitely dead.
Now they certainly
are.
Now they really are.
One would hope. Otherwise, we've got far bigger problems that we need to be discussing if they're still alive after 550
My
years.
My absolute favorite thing about the Princess and the Tower survived Ricardians, when you ask them like, so the bodies that they found in the stairwell, exactly where apparently the two princes were stashed, they found these two bodies of these two boys. Who were they? Was this just like a kind of standard thing that like someone dies in the grounds of the Tower of London, they just stick them in the stairwell? Is that it's just a coincidence? And they literally just go, I don't know, I figure they're someone.
Yeah. Like how many children of that age do you think were murdered in the tower and just, buried under a stairwell?
Yeah. And
like
and
more than two is
more than two would be pretty surprising.
It's looking like
to
more
me.
Than two, to be honest.
Yeah.
The blasé nature of the response is like, I think there might be more that we should look in there, I think.
Yeah, we should really maybe look in all the stairwells and
get a big X-ray machine or something.
I also want to have my tower renovated and the guys like pull away the plaster and there's the skeletons of two young boys and they go, you've had some right cowboys in here.
I'll tell you what, mate, you've had some right Richard III's back here.
Sort of the intranesine Plantagenet disputes. That's a problem, you see. They really should have rescreened that.
It's a licensing issue.
I also really like the idea of somebody who has had to fast forward because of the trigger warning and being under the impression that the trigger warning was related to the princes in the tower.
I mean, it's not great.
Yeah. It's not. we can return.
People
to
are
the,
very
we can
upset
the
that the princes in the tower are dead. Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah, I I got to be honest, those people need a different hobby.
Yeah. Mm. I've only made it up to Richard II. Stop spoiling early modern history for me.
I really think they should take up pickleball.
As someone who's Cassandra screaming about the patterns repeating, I need you to catch up. Yeah. You can't be at Richard II. I need you to catch up.
Yeah, we got.
Yeah, no, there's like, we got like 560 years of stuff that we need to go over.
You haven't even really gotten to fascism yet, and that is my major concern.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to tell him they're going to paint you with a hunchback. He didn't listen.
Censorship. Are you listening?
I'm just trying to imagine the person who's trying to understand the 21st century political context entirely through 15th century political culture. They're like, royal court.
I see.
Courtiers.
It was like with the beheading.
Dispossessed heirs. Yeah. Like, and in which, like 15th century politics, everyone has CTE.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I feel like that's been true of all politics since the beginning of time.
It pretty much
everyone who's ever made a like cultural decision of national security has had a head injury for sure.
Oh, yeah.
This is honestly, I've wanted to do a project on this for a really long time, is to track just how many people who were involved in making those decisions had histories of head trauma.
I mean,
because in the Middle Ages, it's all of
them. Some autistic person out there has a graph for this, and they're in trouble. Keep your head down. Yeah. That's information we need.
It was a dangerous time.
I recently watched, because my boyfriend didn't watch any Doctor Who, and it was like the one TV show I was allowed to watch. And because he doesn't have internet in his flat yet, we watched a lot of DVDs over Christmas. At one point, I was sitting on the couch in my nightdress with my male boyfriend who was drinking a beer watching a Guy Ritchie movie, and I was like, wow, I'm in like a performance art piece of heterosexual domesticity. This is crazy.
Yeah, they call when you're watching DVDs, it's early 2000s.
I'm living in 2007 right now. We're listening to the radio. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Because
one of the DVDs we picked up at the op shop had like three Doctor Who episodes on it, which were three of my favorite Doctor Who episodes, we got it. And so the first Doctor Who episode he ever watched was the one where they go back to Queen Victoria's Scotland, and there's a werewolf, and like the bit at end is like, oh my god, the royal family are werewolves, and that's like kind of a joke at the end. But I'm always like, Billy Piper's like, well, they are very private. And they're very strict with scheduling.
That's the main thing people say.
And I'm like, you're right, it's not the worst theory.
I love the idea that that's what you take away from a werewolf, like the very strict schedules.
Yeah, I mean, they do.
Werewolf's
Google calendar.
If you're going to be successful as a lycanthrope, you probably need to schedule pretty extensively.
Yeah, you need
that needs to be part of your life.
You just need to be aware of the moon phases. That's it. The rest of your time's your own.
Yeah, but you got to write it down,
Do you keep track of the moon phases without a calendar?
Certainly. Certainly I do.
I just feel
different
it in my
strokes
bones.
For different folks,
I
guess.
You got to have some me time.
You're just gauging it based on the tides, or what's like, how does that work?
I just feel it in my bones. I'm like,
I actually have a moon phase note.
Oh.
That's awesome. It's cool as hell. We should pay more attention to the moon. It kind of rocks.
Yeah. Very, very difficult to be a Muslim lycanthrope. I wonder if you're going to miss all of the good festivals.
I wonder if Apollo's going to turn up in this show and be like, hey, my main point is that we haven't been paying enough attention to the moon.
Maybe.
Get back over here. That's him, isn't it?
Could
God
be.
Of the moon, Apollo?
Sun god.
Who's the moon?
Selene.
Yes. Like Artemis, and then there was a kind of personified moon situation.
Yeah,
that's
Selene.
Who was called either Selene or Phoebe.
No wonder you're so familiar with the moon phases.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then it was sort of syncretized with Artemis. So one of Artemis's epithets is Phoebe. Just like Apollo's epithet is Phoebus, it means shining. Then it got sort of more kind of like sort of separated out, and then there was a kind of sort of standalone moon goddess, but not until like a fair bit late, not until like the Hellenistic period.
I like that. They splintered off the departments. They sort of balkanized it. Now we're giving the moon its own department now.
Exactly. More bureaucracy. I love it.
That's ancient religion right there. Is like, you know, I want to build a temple, but I'm really into Artemis's the moon right now. So we're doing, this is Artemis Phoebe. No, you don't get to go to this temple to sacrifice for hunting. That's a different Artemis, different temple. Get that shit out of here.
Yeah, that's Artemis wearing a different hat.
This is moon-based.
And this is what I think is important to remember when we're watching this show, which is about how your average Athenian whoever, your average Athenian moron would have conceived of Greek mythology. There is a wish to turn Greek mythology, or Greek myth, if you like. I prefer to call it myth rather than mythology, because I feel like mythology is a bit of sort of peculiar lexicographically. There's this desire to turn Greek myths into a kind of, well, it's the Bible. It's what they had instead of the Bible, because they are stories about the gods, and they are stories about heroes and nymphs and personified fountains and things of this nature. But what they're the cultural noise of what is going on around you. And the reason that we know about them is that people use them as inspiration for art. That's how we know anything about them. So any version of a Greek myth that we know about is because somebody at some point or another haven't sat down with like every single version that has ever been told of this myth. They have chosen a version and they've chosen to crystallize it. We're seeing a snapshot in time of this particular story. When someone goes to see a Greek tragedy and there is a very, very kind of like a sort of convoluted system of references to a Greek myth in the kind of the opening salvo, you are supposed to recognize what that is. You're supposed to be like, oh, okay, well, chill, fine. Okay, oh, you're talking about the swans and eggs. Oh, yeah, no, I know. Okay, I'm caught up. I know what's happening. But there's no specific religious significance to it. And there's also no particular cultural attachment to any one version. So there are a number of different versions that exist in different places. It just so happens that we have very, very little of it surviving. So you might see on the wall of a temple a version of a myth which is different from the version you know in Homer, and it's a different from the version you know in a play. It might be in the Trojan cycle, which most of which is completely lost and fragmentary. We have just such a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of the literature of this time to even say what Greek myth was, other than it was the cultural atmosphere that was around you. And it's so interesting that you mentioned Doctor Who, Grace, because that's the corollary. I have never seen an episode of Doctor Who, but I know what a Dalek is.
I mean, how could you not?
I don't know. I just never have.
They're about. No, I mean, how would you not know what a Dalek was?
Yeah,
they're just because they're in the zeitgeist.
They're in the zeitgeist.
They're there. Like Darth Vader, if you've never seen Star Wars.
Yeah. In some ways, Doctor Who is also kind of an example of this kind of storytelling, because they just every now and again go, okay, it's the same guy, but he's got different vibes. And maybe we forgot what we did with him 20 years ago. So we're going to do something that actually doesn't make sense given what happened 20 years ago. But it's all right. It's just a device. It's a device for telling a story. he's split off. This particular one feels this particular way about this particular thing. And the other guy felt a different way. And the next guy will feel a different way. But it's just, you know.
He's changed.
Yeah.
He's changed.
It's the same guy, and it's also not. But it's not that important because we're just doing bits.
So in that way, this particular method of telling a Greek myth or an ancient myth or a Roman myth, however you want to put it, however you want to think of it, is actually it's actually pretty legitimate. It's just, I think, stylistically quite annoying.
Yeah, there's.
It does feel like we're still in 2012, because it's like, oh, cool. some English teacher somewhere was like, we got to make the Greek myths cool for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Which whoever was the person who said that is my spirit animal. And that you were describing very specifically my people, like my son's second grade teacher. this is exactly who we're talking about, and I love him.
Yeah.
So okay, so, but the at a basic level, there's no division in ancient Greek life between the gods and humanity. They are everywhere, all around you, all the time. They're in that one spring that's out on the hillside. They're in the trees. They're in your the transactions that you're doing in the market. They're there as you're firing up some pottery. Like, the gods are just everywhere, all around you, all the time. They're not separable from the normal course of daily life. And even sacrifice, which we think of as being a religious thing, is just something you do as part of your daily life.
Yeah.
So, like, propitiating the gods is not a separate thing that you have to do. It's not like going to church. It's like, we're having a meal, little sacrifice.
It is very like, it's an errand.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
It is very like nature allegory based, because it is like the gods are everywhere. They are us. They're among us. That spring over there, you could go every day of your life and have a normal swan be there and everything be totally fine. But the one day you go and something bad happens to you and everyone goes, oh, today the swan was Zeus. Like, it's still the swan and it's still the spring. But sometimes when you go in the woods, something bad happens to you.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to understand why the swan fucked you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Sometimes your friends never...
It's easy to believe it was Zeus.
Sometimes you go in the woods every day and everything's fine. And sometimes you go in the woods and your family never see you again. And they have to go, all right, there was some kind of dryad in there.
Yeah.
Fucked him up.
If you get fucked by a swan, you better hope it was Zeus.
I mean, yeah.
The existence of that swan is more terrifying than the existence of Zeus.
If it manages to impregnate you before it breaks your arm and it's not Zeus, that's a very deft swan.
Pretty impressive swan. Like the camera pans out. There's just like this swan smirking in the corner. Like, I'm not Zeus. I'm just a swan.
I love the phrase a deft swan. That's gonna rattle around my brain for about the next 3 or 4 weeks. So thank you for that.
My band name.
Yeah, that is nice. So yeah, Zeus.
We're the deft swans.
There we go.
We're ready to rock.
And we're protected by the queen. Zeus drags Prometheus off of his rock to get him to reassure him. And Prometheus is like, yeah, you're going to be fine. But then he's like, narrator, he's not going to be fine. And to be honest with you, if I was Prometheus, every time Zeus brought me down from the liver-eating mountain for a meeting, I would be bringing up the liver-eating situation.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
But like, just to circle back on the whole me having my liver eaten every day.
I'm giving you a lot of very good advice. I feel like I'm making up for some of what
Could we dial back on that? Could we go to every other day?
Toe, maybe. Could I lose a toe?
Yeah. Any of this
Is
would
there
be
an another organ? Like, do they like kidneys? I don't know.
Could you just make
like,
me
let's
bald
mix it up
or
a
something?
Little bit.
I have actually, I've spoken to the eagle and he's not happy with it either.
I mean,
I'm speaking for both of us.
Both the eagle and Prometheus should talk to their unions.
The
eagle and Prometheus are a bargaining unit labor terms. That's...
I will eat no more of this man's liver until I get good working conditions.
And then the eagle and Prometheus is like, I don't want to swap, just to be clear. I don't want him to be eating my liver.
I mean, look, you've got me out
first
here.
First drafts there.
You've got me out here on this rock. There's no bathroom. Like, what am I supposed? I'm just supposed to shit down the side of the cliff.
I don't
like,
have mandated
in front of Prometheus.
Yeah, it's got an open wound. It's not hygienic.
Yeah.
No, some penicillin maybe. I don't know.
Weekends off.
Yeah,
for
that'd
sure.
Be good.
Yeah.
Every other weekend.
Yeah, the Eagles. The Eagles got kids. You know.
Yeah.
He wants to see him.
Does he?
Yeah.
Does he?
Eagle wants.
Seems like an absentee father.
The eagle
to me.
Wants to go to his kid's nativity play.
He's
Come
a
on,
workaholic. This eagle, you know. Yeah. They're like, you can stop pecking out Prometheus's liver for one night, and he's like, nah, they're riding my ass up that cliff today
at the liver factory.
Yeah.
I do like that. Every time we do a modern retelling of Greek myth, there is going to be something that's essentially like Zeus is an emotionally unavailable father, and it's like, yeah, that's always been true, but there's just sort of like a new way of saying it every time.
Yeah, although they've made Hera an emotionally available wife in this, which I don't think is accurate.
I don't think she was very emotionally available. Oh no, you're right. As a wife,
she's like, love you.
Yeah.
That's not really Hera's vibe.
That's not her vibe at all.
Hera's vibe is like, who is that bitch? I'll kill her.
Yeah.
who have you been looking at?
But that's the undertone.
I can't believe
that's
you've had
undertone.
Another kid.
Yeah.
That like that would be pretty annoying if you were Hera and it's just another one.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That is like, very much the vibe of my granddad, prisoner of war vibe. My dad has had a lot of half siblings turn up and I keep being like, are we serious? I think my granddad and his brother just like put on fake mustaches and fucked each other's girlfriends. It's very weird dynamic in my family. But I wasn't familiar with Eurydice's mum being what was she?
A Tacitus?
Tacitus.
Yeah.
Now, okay.
Yeah, so her mum's Tacitus.
Her mom is Tacitus.
Very complex sentences.
She doesn't have a tongue.
No tongue.
She's a cowardly little bitch who accepted a lot of advancement under a particular emperor and then turned round to stab his corpse after his death. That's something
lot of opinions on imperialism and deserts / peace.
Lot of opinions there.
I guess that's why she lost her tongue.
Yeah. Now, never puts in a verb.
Now the tongueless.
Not a one.
The tongueless priest, silent priestesses. So far as I know, this is invented for the purpose of the show, right?
Right. That's why I was like, this isn't usually part of it.
I've never heard of these. Have either of you?
No.
No. Okay. Good. I'm glad. I'm glad.
I read Titus Andronicus as a teenager, and then wrote a version of Titus Andronicus where everyone was an Australian teen. So I'm familiar with the tongue cutting out Shakespearely, but I didn't. I've not really heard about it for the Greeks much.
Yeah, I will say I'm by no means an expert on Greek myth or Greek or ancient Greek religion or anything like that. So I couldn't entirely.
They have kind of put a lot of blocks together and been like, for the sake of the story, these things are happening at the same time.
Yeah,
which is fine.
But the confessions that get told to these silent priestesses are then kept by Hera. There's a bit that annoyed
me. That's why they call her Hera.
She hears.
That's right. Because they should have called her Eavesdropper. That's terrible. Why are you laughing at that? Don't laugh at that. That sucks.
Because I'm a dad, Phoebe. Jesus. Yeah. That's why.
It's his culture.
This is like, please respect my culture.
I'm respecting your culture. This bit annoyed me because they make a whole thing out of saying that Dionysus is a full god, but he had a mortal mother. And this is like totally unusual, and this is why he should be a more grateful stepson. This isn't right. And like, it's not that I'm making a whole thing about like, this is inaccurate, but it's just like, if you're gonna
Heracles is actually a demigod, you know, that shit.
True. First of all, Heracles is a demigod. But second, the reason that Dionysus is a full god is because he is twice born, right? His mother was a princess called Semele, and the story there is she gets raped by Zeus. She is immolated while pregnant by the jealous Hera, and Zeus takes the baby and stitches him into his leg, and the baby is born for the second time. So he's Dionysus the twice born. This is another thing which like has like lots of parallels in like other myth systems, like all around the world, like the twice born god, and it is supposed to be like in tune with the seasons and the harvests, and like he's not like specifically like a harvest god, but he's like the god of the vines. He's the god of like wild revels and so
Zeus
on and so
is kind of like a seahorse dad.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So Zeus is his father and his mother. So that is why, according to the like internal logic that they've set themselves, Dionysus is a full god, even though he technically has a mortal mother.
That's more interesting. Like I hate when they cut corners on shit like that to be a full god and you don't need to know why. And it's like, well, but you could do like a cutaway scene on that.
There's also no particular reason why they need to make a thing about how he's a full god even though he had a mortal mother.
Yeah, because you haven't even introduced demigods. You could just people would just be like, oh, I guess he's Zeus's son, so he's a god. Like,
also, I'm pretty sure that Athena's mother is she's like a nymph, so she's like semi-mortal.
Yeah.
I'd have loved a scene with Zeus with a really big leg.
Yes.
Just God, this is horrible. This really hurts.
Yeah. And some of this gynecology and obstetrics. It's really old fashioned.
So uncomfortable, man.
This is more uncomfortable than this is uncomfortable when you do it properly. When you do it on a lopsided way, very annoying.
And then, like, just off to the side, there's this swan just being like.
I mean, I have had my legs attacked by swans before, so maybe that's what
they're
after.
Yeah, well, you might want to keep an eye on that.
The swan has kind of a Flintstones energy, like, oh, you think it's bad for you.
Yeah. I'm a damn swan.
Yeah.
I have a spiral cock.
Also, there's a bit where they say no two prophecies are the same. Like, what? What are you talking about, no two? But then they're not a prophecy. If they're a bit different each time, then that's just something
I guess
different.
It's like every person has its own, like no one has the same as someone else. Is that
it? Yeah, that was my understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
But then it's really like, how many are you going to write?
Yeah.
There are a lot of people.
It's busy working at the prophecy office.
And this is what I'm saying, bureaucracy.
We're
all special snowflakes.
In some ways,
we all need our own
Zeus
prophecy.
Is just making, you know, hiring demands.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about, you know, the prophecies that are really weird because those are the ones that make the headlines. You know, you're going to kill your father and marry your mother, whatever. But, you know, the most prophecies actually, you know, they're just bureaucrats. They're doing their best. They have to toss off loads of these in a day. You know, you're getting stuff like
you're going to
buy a pumpkin
wheat.
Spice latte.
Yeah.
your wife's going to be like a bit annoyed when you get in, but she's not going to say exactly why.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, stuff like that. Run of the mill.
Yeah. Your mango smoothie this morning will not benefit from the addition of kale.
No. Need you be told that by the gods.
You're going to walk around by a river and no one's going to appear to you and it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, you need Apoora, goddess of the fruit harvest, to tell you what to put in your smoothie? I don't think so.
Rivers are just nice.
Yeah.
You don't need a naiad or a dryad. Which one's the water one? Naiad to turn up, give
you
a sword.
The dryad would never be wet.
No. Turn up and give you a big sword. That's I've mixed mythologies there, but
dryads canonically dry is my understanding.
Woman of the lake and whatnot, right?
No one would need that, but so Dionysus is kind of like the least favorite son, and then he goes off and he decides to help Orpheus, who is trying to kill himself because Eurydice has been hit by a car after going and seeing her silent mother. And then
she wants to dump Orpheus.
And because Cassandra is like, you've been thinking about leaving him for ages. Today's the day you're going to do it. And then she isn't actually going to leave him. She gets hit by a car. Cassandra's like, see, you're leaving everyone. And I don't really think that's her thing. Doesn't she usually just
she's not like a monkey's paw.
Yeah, puppy. She usually just says exactly what's going to happen. And then it exactly does.
And then no one listens. Yeah, and there's also a bit where she's just like, oh, like, no one likes me. It's like, maybe you want to put a bit more detail. I feel like...
And brush your teeth.
Like you're,
if you're eating cat food.
I feel like some
of this is on you, Cassandra.
Yeah, I feel like your oracles are like a little bit dependent on semantics, and people are going to get sick of that pretty quick.
I mean, to be fair, maybe she was saying exactly what was going to happen initially, and she's just spent so long having people not believe her. Now she's just doing bits so she can do kind of witty remarks. Afterwards,
if I've proved one thing with my life, it's that people don't like semantics.
I'd like to think that for Cassandra, she could really benefit from working on herself for a little while, instead of just lamenting. Like, you can only lament for so long before you got to put the work
away from people, and then you won't see what's coming. You know.
Yeah, I get it. You've got PTSD from living with Clytemnestra, haven't we all?
We've all got stuff.
She was a difficult employer. I understand.
Phoebe's been in a modern hospital, so
I couldn't even find her.
We've all got stuff.
That was just for Pat. That's one for that's just
on
just
that
for
note.
Pat.
On that note.
This, I mean, Phoebe, frankly, much of this is just for me, and that's why this is my favorite hour of the week.
Yeah.
That's
there we go.
Just saying.
That's what we do. Right. Yeah. That's episode one of Chaos, pretty much. I think we've covered the main points.
I'm pretty stoked about this one, guys. I'm looking to see where this goes. I'm excited for this.
It's nice to be not doing those about to die.
Oh, it's so nice.
A show that could only be enjoyed by an ancient Roman chariot racer who got such a severe head injury that he's been transported 2,000 years into the future.
Don't speak it into existence. Lindsay Lohan will make a rom-com about it. It'll be Christmas. It'll be a nightmare.
This Saturnalia. So it remains for us only to thank Grace very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. This was a joy.
It's been our pleasure. Is there anything you would like to plug to the loyal hogs of this show?
Well, you can follow me at Grace Jarvis Oh No on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and Blue Sky and whatnot.
And you should.
Thank you. My special is up on my YouTube channel. It's called This Is the Last Goldfish That I'm Going to Eat For You. It's my first stand-up comedy special. It's about getting diagnosed with autism. And etc. Being
if
raised
you can
by veterans.
Such a thing on this podcast.
It's please go and watch that because it was expensive to make, and I want to prove it was worth it. Basically that's it. I'm doing my show for next year because my show for the Melbourne Comedy Festival is called This. Just because I'm crying doesn't mean I'm not having a nice time, and it's about moving overseas and falling in love and working in a sex shop on Oxford Street. And I'm going to do that at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, Sydney Comedy Festival, Brisbane Comedy Festival, and Glasgow Comedy Festival, and Edinburgh Fringe. So that's my year.
There you go. We'll link some of those things in the show notes.
I mean, you can just follow me on Instagram. I'll post about it.
Yeah. Depending on where you are geographically and how you're inclined, do as many of those things as you feel able to.
I mean, I would love that. I love to come on here. So many of my cultural references are not useful on other podcasts.
Oh, well, that is a service we very much provide. It's a pleasure to have you. If you're listening to this, this is a free one. Phoebe accidentally revealed some things about herself that she normally saves for the Patreon feed. So if you like information such as that, do consider the Patreon. It's $5 a month. You can sign up. We have a bonus episode every 2 weeks. And we'll be doing half of Chaos on there. So if you want the other half of Chaos, or you want things like Gladiator 2, Gladiator 1.
What was the Jason Statham movie I did?
Oh, God, Crank.
Crank.
Was it Crank 2 that you did?
I did Regular Crank, I think.
Regular Crank, okay.
I think Grace did Regular Crank and Nathan did Crank 2.
Oh, okay, yeah. So all the legacy Masters of Our Domain is on there from the Seinfeld era, the movie episodes, the Seinfeld episode. It's all up there. It still can be enjoyed. Yeah. So check that out. Also the Romecast. That is also a thing that you can also get. $15 for season 2. Season 1 is available free if you want to try for your buck. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.